tuned in to listen. Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk. Happy Tuesday, everybody. 201-939-4513. That's your phone number. Give us a call. We'll talk some Giants football with you. We have a guest coming up at 12:30 on today's program, Ernie Martinez from KLSD out in San Diego on Fox Sports Radio will join us to preview the Giants matchup against the San Diego Chargers. And we'll also talk a little bit about the NFL 100. We've gotten the full list now from the NFL. So, Paul, a very busy show.
Indeed it is. And by the way, that's number one for the San Diego Chargers. I bet our producer Matt before the show that there'd have to be an over-under for how many times one of us called them San Diego.
I said San Diego, I guess.
You've already gone once. You've already gone once. So I suspected it might be as high as five during the course of the show, but you've already put one on the board.
Well, and by the way, folks, thanks for joining us on Twitter. If you want to watch the rest of the show, make sure you go to Giants.com with the Giants mobile app, and you can watch the rest of the show right there. You know, it's funny. I don't even think they're going to be in Los Angeles for more than a couple of years. So I think they're going to figure out a way to come, go back to San Diego, or maybe even wind up somewhere else. Who knows? That's just my gut feeling. I have no evidence to back that up.
No.
But, I mean, Los Angeles Chargers just sounds so – I guess L.A. Chargers sounds better than Los Angeles Chargers,
well,
but it's still weird.
The biggest problem is that it's the same color scheme, same logo.
Same everything.
So how do you not – call them San Diego.
Didn't they come out with some type of new logo design?
Did they?
I thought they did. Hold on. Let me do a little search here. Of course, this is great for the people that, you know, are listening. You
they
can't
may
exactly
have gone,
see this.
Remember now, over the years, they had the white helmet with the bolt, and then they had the navy helmet with the bolt, and many, many, many years ago, they used to have the uniform numbers on the sides of the helmets, too. You probably don't remember those days.
I do not.
Okay.
So here is the some of the new things that they've kind of thrown out there. Well, that's just a big helmet.
Hold yeah. On. That.
I know. Hold on. We're getting there.
In any event, I do not know if Ernie will continue to cover the team in Los Angeles, but he was part of the covering crew in San Diego, and therefore he knows about the bulk of the players on the team. And so we're very curious to see what he could tell us about what the Chargers have in store
so
for the Giants.
So these are a few that have been going around.
Oh.
You got like the L.A. Dodgers looking thing.
Oh,
like
that's
the
terrible.
LA.
That's terrible.
You got that.
That's all right, but it's still too similar to what
thing.
They used to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's they haven't changed a whole lot. I guess this is something else that I saw kind of laying around somewhere, these guys. I don't know. So,
yeah,
whatever.
The Chargers and Giants play each other in Week 5,
yes.
By the way, of the regular season, and they'll be coming to the Meadowlands,
yes.
To MetLife Stadium. So we will not have to worry about where we are going to go. Wouldn't that be funny if some team accidentally went to San Diego to play the Chargers and then played them in Los Angeles?
And that, by the way, as of today, because the other games can still change because they're flexed, this is the only non-flexible 1 p.m. home game the Giants have all year long, which is amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, well, that's the way the league is going, you know.
Well, playing West Coast teams don't help either. They try not to put those teams at 1 o'clock if they can help it.
Yeah, and for them, it's a 10 o'clock game.
Correct.
You know, that's pretty nasty, pretty tough for them. But that's the deal. Giants play the Chargers in Week 5. Now, to John's point, as he was trying to get to before we rerouted into the whole Charger thing, was the 100, I believe you said.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, we had discussed last week, and you threw A.J. Green's name out as a guy who belongs in the penthouse as well, as maybe the top four receivers who separate themselves from the rest. Mm-hmm. I could see it. I understand it. I still think he's a millimeter behind the other three.
And by the way, he was ranked at 17th, so it's not like he's far behind.
No, right. No, I don't dispute your notion.
I know that.
But I still think there is a slight sliver of delineation between the top three.
I don't buy that.
And to this point, NFL Network has decided that, indeed, the three receivers who made the top 10.
No, this is NFL Network. This is player voted.
That's right. It is the
correct.
NFL Network announcement
right.
Of the player vote.
Correct.
Julio Jones, 3. Antonio Brown, 4. Odell Beckham Jr., 8. And
that's fine.
I don't see how anybody could complain about that.
I don't. I mean, I think that's fine. I think the rest of the non-Giants in the top 10, I think, are somewhat interesting. I don't know how on God's green earth Aaron Rodgers is the sixth best player in the NFL when he puts a whole team on his back every year and gets them to the playoffs with no defense, a shaky I don't get it, and a shaky running game.
Well,
how is he not in the top three? I don't understand.
What I would have done, to be honest with you,
put the quarterbacks on a separate list.
And they can't do that because it's all inclusive.
Right.
I would have put him right behind Brady at number two.
I would have been fine with that.
I mean, Brady's got the titles. I can't go against
him. And, Paul, you know what? If you want to put Von Miller, too, because he's the best defensive player in the league, I'm fine with that, too. Okay. But he's got to be three then.
Yeah.
He's got to be three. Like, if you're having a draft today, who are you picking first, Aaron Rodgers or Julio Jones?
Well, to me, it's a no-brainer. The quarterback's got to be ahead of the wide receivers because he gets
right.
the ball.
So, by the way, if you didn't see the list, folks, I'll give you the top 10. Tom Brady was voted 1, Von Miller was voted 2, Julio Jones 3, Antonio Brown 4, Khalil Mack 5, Aaron Rodgers 6, Ezekiel Elliott 7, Odell Beckham 8, Le'Veon Bell 9, and Matt Ryan number 10. So that's how the top 10 went off. If you didn't see it, I'll give you 11 to 22. Derek Carr at 11, which I think, by the way, is too high for him. David Johnson at 12, he's an excellent player. I have no problem with that. Eric Berry 13, I think that's a little steep. Dak Prescott, 14, too much too soon. Aaron Donald, 15. Drew Brees, 16. A.J. Green, 17. Tyron Smith, 18. Patrick Peterson, 19. And Luke Kuechly at 20. So that's your top 20. There's a few guys I wouldn't have in there necessarily, but it's a pretty, pretty strong list.
Now, as we always talk about every time we bring up one of these lists, John, you need to know the parameters and the criteria. And I believe, unless I'm mistaken, maybe you know a little more about the list than I do, when the players get these sheets to fill out, I guess it's in December of the previous season.
That sounds about right.
Because we've seen them filling them out in the lunchroom.
Well, I've seen them fill out the Pro Bowl. I'm not sure if I've seen them fill out this.
Oh, I've seen them do this.
Oh, okay. So you know better than me. Go ahead.
And, well, but my belief is that they're asked, fill out the top 100 going into next season. In other words, as they say on the top of the title page, it's the top 100 players of 2017.
So you're predicting future performance.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. So they're saying, well, this is what the guy did this year, but now we think he's got so much ups, this is where we're going to place him for the upcoming season. And that's what makes it kind of difficult because, like, for me, Matt Ryan was awesome in 2016. But you know what? Truthfully, that's the first awesome season he's had in his career.
Mm.
He's had very good seasons, but to say flat out awesome, what do you have, 38 touchdowns and 7 picks?
Let me see.
It was a ridiculous number.
I'm booking it up. Yeah, he had 38 and 7 last year. That was fantastic.
And by far better than any other year he's had.
Yeah, his other best year was 32 and 14. So, yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean,
I think that's
this
fair.
This was his, quote, career year.
I mean, look at this way. He never had a quarterback rating above 100 before. In fact, his highest before this year was 99, and the season I brought up, he was 117 this year. So that is a significant difference.
So
that's fair.
You know, now, so when you put the list together, to me, he can be in the top 10 if you're talking about 2016. I don't know that I can project him to have that kind of year again in 17. I don't know that I could do that. And I certainly would not base his top 10 ranking on his entire career because there have been other quarterbacks, including Phillip Rivers.
How about Drew Brees?
Drew Brees, who have put up better numbers over the last 6 years than he has. I'm just saying.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And I'm surprised, too. I thought the players would kind of take a little bit of a deep breath on some of the rookies in terms of putting them up there.
Yeah, they didn't do that.
They did not do that at all. I mean, look, Ezekiel Elliott 7. Running backs generally don't take step backs. You would expect him, if again, as long as he doesn't have any off-the-field suspensions or whatever, he should have a pretty good year next season. But I thought Dak Prescott top 20 was a little bit strong. I don't think he's going to have the sophomore slump everyone else thinks, but top 20, I think. That's going – I mean, yeah, Dak Prescott ahead of Drew Brees. That's crazy talk.
I totally agree.
Like, if for one season you're trying to win a Super Bowl, would the Cowboys rather have Drew Brees or Dak Prescott? They'd rather have Drew Brees. I mean, come on.
Probably Big Ben, too.
who came in at 22, by the way.
Behind Prescott.
Absolutely right. No question about it.
And Big Ben not only had a terrific season, but led his team far into the playoffs.
That is absolutely true. AFC Championship game, and Matthew Stafford was at 31, for example. But again, I always... And I know people say, oh, well, the players should choose who these, you know, who should be on these lists. Here's the problem, folks. I don't think a lot of people really understand how some of these players view the league as a whole while they're in it and while they're playing. If you're, just to give an example, you're Odell Beckham Jr. or you're Sterling Shepard, you're handed a sheet of paper, all right? And they said, name your top 100 guys. How the heck is a wide receiver on the New York Giants, are you going to know who a good offensive lineman is on another team? I mean, you might know who good defensive players are because you watch tape of your opponents.
Right.
But how the heck, if you're Odell Beckham Jr., are you going to know if the Green Bay Packers have a good offensive lineman? You have no idea. No idea. And you're really only going to know a ton about your opponents. You're not going to know about the teams that you didn't play that year and really how well guys are playing because, guys, trust me, these players aren't like watching – other teams on tape for fun if they're not going to play them. That's not how this works.
They're not.
So I find these lists sometimes to be popularity contests more than anything else, well, in my humble opinion.
I will say to you, John,
just saying.
Not only do I agree, I would also say that this is what happens during the offseason when you've got people try to strum up as much interest, as much talk, as much things that you could find to fill as anything. And we're guilty of it too here sometimes on the program where we'll take one of those lists apart and we'll make a show out of it because let's face it, it is the off season. Now, we do, for the most part, try to give you guys some substance. We got a ton of draft stuff that we do. We build stuff around minicamp. We build stuff around the look ahead like we're doing today with the San Diego Chargers. Make that the LA Chargers. That's number two. Okay. Number two. I told you it's going to be five. It's two so far. So, you know, we do try to build stuff around that is at least substantial as opposed to some of this fluff garbage. Now, look, I worked at one point for NFL Network, so I love those people. But let's face it, that thing is nothing but huge hype for them. And that's all it is to try to fill time.
Because all people do is write articles about the list every morning it's released. And what is that? Free advertising for NFL Network.
Why not? And they make programs out of it. And advertisers want to buy the advertising on it. So it's making money for them. It's filling time. It's a great thing for them. But in reality, think about it. Now, what John said in terms of players don't really understand what they're doing when they're voting for these guys because they haven't seen them.
It's not their fault.
No, it's not.
No.
No, it's not. But here's the thing. Same thing with the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they get the Pro Bowl sheet, and once again,
and they go, oh, I recognize this name. I'll vote for that guy.
Right. It's no different than the Pro Bowl.
Same thing.
You know, and now the difference is, at least in the Pro Bowl, and I guess, I don't know, for better or for worse, that's a weighted voting system where the fans get to vote on the internet.
Do coaches do something too with that with the Pro Bowl? Am I wrong about that? Or do the coaches pick the backups? Maybe is that what it is?
I don't
coaches
remember
coaches do
anymore.
Something with the Pro Bowl, right? Matt Cohen. Do coaches have any bearing on who makes the Pro Bowl? Do they pick backups or something like that? Let me look.
They
that
do
up.
In
I'm
baseball.
Not sure about
they
that.
Do in baseball.
Right. I know.
They don't in football. I don't think.
You could be right. Oh, injury replacements. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they pick the injury replacements. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. I think the coaches maybe do pick the – and there's so many of those. It actually ends up being like –
Oh, I know. I know. But I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, you could make an argument that this NFL Top 100 is totally useless because it's almost repetitive in the way that the players are still voting in a nonsensical poll for the Pro Bowl players too. In any event. You know what would be better?
Oh, here we go. Do you want to know how the NFL Pro Bowl voting works?
Go ahead. Tell us, John.
Okay, let me see. I got it right here. Hopefully this is updated properly.
As long as it's got the weighted system, we know it's correct.
It does. Let's see. Oh, no, this might be old. I don't trust this. It says it's a one-third system, but let me see if it has.
Ah, that sounds right.
Yeah, but it was referencing 2010, so I don't really
want to. Oh, that's way too old.
I don't want to look at that. Here we go. Player selection. Let's see. Currently, players have voted into the Pro Bowl. This is from Wikipedia. As you know, Wikipedia never has bad information on it. Are voted into the Pro Bowl by the coaches, the players, and the fans. Each group's ballots count for one-third.
Okay.
Of the vote. So it is split one-third, one-third, one-third.
Now, I would say this. if you really wanted to put a little bit more teeth into this, just a little bit more teeth.
Have Paul Dottino pick him.
You would restrict the positions right. that each segment can vote on.
Correct.
How about you just give the offensive ballots out and say, guys, you can only vote for defensive players, correct. And vice versa. Would that hold a little more weight for you?
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, the other thing is that you're going to vote for your friends. So any player that went to school with somebody else, what do you think? Do you think I'm joking?
No. And by the way,
you don't think every Ohio State player put Ezekiel Elliott in, and that's how he got in the top 10? Of course they did.
And I wouldn't be shocked if some guys who belong to the same rep agency are voting for their guys too,
or they work out with them in the offseason. Take your pick, whatever.
Sure.
Absolutely right. No question. So anyway, 201-939-4513. Folks, we'll take your calls until 12:30 when Ernie Martinez from Fox Sports San Diego will join us. Let's go to Sean in California. He's been a hold of folks. We do have some open lines if you want to get in. The time is now. What's up, Sean?
What's up, guys? How are you guys doing this morning?
Hi.
Hey, Sean, what's up?
You know, it surprised me. I know it's voted on by the players, but what surprised me is how Eli Manning never made the top 100. Did you guys
hear that? He has made the top 100.
Well, Philip Rivers right there.
He has made it in years past, Sean, just not this year. He has made it in years past. He didn't make it this year, though. And frankly, if you look at his numbers this year compared to the last two with all the interceptions, you would understand why maybe he dropped off the list a little bit.
Gotcha. I was just shocked at that.
Last year?
What I think they should do is, don't you think they should put the top 100 voted on by the fans?
Well, Sean, I can tell you last year Eli got voted 47th, okay? So he dropped off the list this year because he didn't have quite as good of a year. And quite frankly, the Giants' offense was a lot worse this year than it was the year prior.
True that. Yeah, I was just calling in to say that. And then I have to go back to work. Sorry, guys. But then I was going to say that the Giants are the top-rated Madden team in Madden 18 this year. So hopefully that means something. Hopefully we can be the best team in the league this year. And, you know, I'm ready to book my tickets to Minneapolis, but I don't want to jump too soon. But I'm so confident in this team. I've been a fan for 10 years. You know, I'm a new fan. I'm only 24 years old. But just watching this show, and you guys teach me so much and have on so much good guests about the older Giants and things of that nature. So I want to thank you guys for what you guys do for BBKL, and you guys have a good rest of your day. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Sean. We appreciate the kind words, and we're happy we entertain and inform. That's what we try to do here.
Nice call. By the way, Bleacher Report put out simply a top 100 quarterbacks in NFL history.
Oh, boy.
No, just so you know, because you had mentioned, should you separate the quarterbacks?
Can I guess who number one would be?
It's not a terrible idea.
I hate the way that... Wait, did I see Aaron Brooks?
He's number 100.
What? I'm dismissing this already. Aaron Brooks.
Aaron Brooks is 100.
Aaron Brooks, I know he had like two or three really good years throwing touchdowns to Joe Horn.
Are you kidding me?
Aaron Brooks?
Oh, no. Should
Who's 99?
Should I even do this? Babe Parilli.
That was before my time, obviously.
Oh, my. He's a former Jet from the AFL days.
Paul covered him, obviously.
Yeah. Dandy Don Meredith, 98.
So how do you have Aaron Brooks two away from Don Meredith? Don Meredith, he won a Super Bowl, didn't he? With Dallas before Staubach got there?
No, he did not.
He did not?
No, he did not.
Okay.
By the way, 97 is Chad Pennington.
Actually, I'm sorry. Meredith got to the Super Bowl. That was the year they lost in, Super Bowl IV? Chad Pennington, 97. Oh, my God. This is just comedy.
That would have been Morton, by the way.
That was Morton. That's right. I'm sorry. Good call.
But this – oh, my goodness. I can't do this list.
This year's 96? Yeah,
Jeff Hostetler is 96.
He started quarterback for like 3 years.
No, well, he had some terrific years with the Raiders. Really, really,
How
really good years with the Raiders.
How many years was he a starting quarterback?
Oh, he must have been a starter for almost a decade by the time
no,
he was done.
Really?
By the time he was done?
Let me see. Hold on. I got to look that up. Now.
Remember, he was with the Redskins, too. Haas played a number, I would say, if it's not 10, it's close to it.
Wait,
Jake
DeLome
is number 95.
Okay. I want to see the top 10.
We're going to dismiss this list because this is ridiculous.
That's
okay.
Pure comedy. Jeff Hostetler was a full-time starter. Do you want me to count 91 for the Giants? Well, so 91 and 92 for the Giants. He played nine games in 92.
Right.
And then he was a full-time starter for the Raiders for four seasons.
Okay.
So six.
All right, a little bit less than I thought.
All right. So what do you got on top of the list here?
Montana.
Is one. That's fine.
Unitas.
Okay, that's fine.
You can argue,
but it's fine.
I'm not going to fight these.
Brady. 3, that's fine.
I'm not going to fight that either.
But Brady had Unitas. That's okay, though.
Peyton,
Manning,
I got no fight with that.
Fine. All right, so it looks like the top of the list is okay. All right, that's fine. I want to see six or ten. Hold on.
I can deal with the five.
All right, Roger the Dodger.
Starback
Captain
is
comeback.
High.
That's fine.
I probably wouldn't go that high, but he's okay. Otto Graham, I can't argue.
He's excellent. Okay. No problem there.
Marino.
8. Okay. That's cool.
Might even be a little low. I might switch him and Starback.
Okay.
To be honest.
Yeah, people hold that in those Super Bowl things.
Tarkenton, 9. And Steve
I don't like. Steve Young to me, and I'm going to go on a little bit of.
By the way, 5'11".
And I'm going to go.
Fouts 12.
I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. I'll apologize in advance.
All right, I'm just going to look. I just want to find where is Phil Simms and where is Eli Manning.
Drew Brees 21. I would have put him.
I'm just going to keep going until I find those guys. Oh, Tittle is 24.
Okay. Well, why add him?
Okay.
His career.
Let's see here. Simms is 30.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
I think that's a good number for him.
I don't have a problem with that. And
now, you know what? I'll go down for a second. I love Phil Simms, Paul. I really do. I can't. They have him over Ben Roethlisberger. I can't do it.
Roethlisberger's a little low.
I think he should be above Simms.
Yeah,
myself.
He's a little bit low.
Is Kent Stabler in the Hall of Fame yet?
Yes.
He just got in, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I wonder where they put, Craig Morton. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, there's Craig Morton.
41.
I forgot that. I forgot Craig Morton.
Oh my goodness!
Won the Super Bowl that year for them.
I would really like to see. I would really like to see.
That's Theismann, right?
Yeah, okay. I'd like to see if Eli is on this list at all. I'll be honest with you.
Keep scrolling up.
I'm trying to. It's getting jammed.
Oh, Archie's up there.
I'll say this. No, Eli's got to be ahead of Archie.
Apparently not.
He's got to be ahead of Theismann too.
Not according to this list.
To be honest with you, come on. Oh, this is really bad.
All right, well, I'm going to give you Steve Young's stats.
The site
as
is
you
all jammed
here,
up,
okay?
Folks.
Well, you keep doing this. I'm going to give you Steve Young.
Right.
Steve Young at number 10 is a heinous crime. It's heinous, okay? And here's why. Steve Young started for 8 seasons in the National Football League. 8.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a lot for a quarterback, okay? Now, his record is undeniable. His completion percentage is undeniable. And his numbers in the years he started are very, very good.
But I understand they're punishing him for his USFL time and his time with Tampa Bay. That's why.
Yeah, but that's fine. I for that small sample size and the system he was put in San Francisco with those weapons,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's a bad player, but he's not number 10 all time, okay? That's a joke.
Wow. Name at 47, by the way. I still haven't gotten Eli.
Jim Hart.
Yeah. Jim Hart was very good.
I know.
But
I would not put... Do you agree Steve Young at 10 is a little high?
A little low, you mean?
A little low. I'm sorry. Yes, low.
I don't have a problem with that.
Really? Ugh.
I think if you want to put him up a couple notches, I don't think that's nearly as offensive as some of these other ones were saying.
No, that's true. I have a thing about Steve Young. I just think he's a little overrated. That's me, though.
Philip Rivers is 50, by the
way. Okay. So they haven't had Eli, huh?
I can't find Eli.
Okay, so keep going up.
I'm trying to. The site is a mess.
That's because your computer's from like 1975. By the way, did you see my tweet I put up the other day? And I made you a mention on it?
I don't think I remember.
I follow this old pictures Twitter account.
Okay.
And they had a picture of like the first computer being put into somebody's house in 1950,
yes, I did.
And it was gigantic.
Yes, I did.
I didn't get a response from you. I expected like a like or a derisive comment or something.
I had a smart aleck response and I let it go.
Oh, that would have been great. Drew Bledsoe ahead of Eli. Doug Williams
Doug
ahead of
Williams? Well,
Doug Williams ahead of Eli's.
Where in the world? You know
that's,
what?
That's almost Bernie Kosar.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Oh, now Paul's really getting upset.
This is ridiculous. I got. First of all, the site is a mess. It's just so jammed. It's so jammed. Trent Green?
No. You must have missed Eli Manning, dude.
All right,
they can't have Trent Green ahead of Eli Manning.
I got an idea.
Jeff Garcia.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Jaworski? Oh, come on. Come on.
Did you miss him? You must have missed him.
All right, hold on. I don't know what to say about this.
All right, you keep going.
Go ahead. Let's get to another call.
201-939-4513. Folks, again, we have a couple open lines. If you want to get in, get in.
Oh, my goodness.
We can we can talk about anything you want to talk about.
Look at this crazy site. It's all jammed up. I can't even do the search mode. Culpepper, 59.
I think you –
Ken O'Brien, 60?
I think you missed him.
Oh, I had to.
Okay, here we go. From Jordan Anabi, Mr. Dottino. Will the Giants have enough cap space to sign Pugh, Richburg, and Odell to extensions? All four.
Pugh, Richburg, and Odell. That's three guys.
Pugh, Richburg, and Odell. Oh, I didn't see Landon there. But I'll throw Landon Collins into the mix because he's another guy that's going to be up.
I think it can be done, but, of course, it takes creativity. I mean, let's face it. You've got to get guys who really want to be here. Because you're going to have to get creative with the numbers. And I'm not necessarily saying you're going to pay them on the cheap, but you have to construct the numbers to where they're okay with the construction and you can still give them what is believed to be market value. So, yeah, I think it can be done. I don't think it's totally out of the question.
Someone else tweeted having Ezekiel Elliott over Le'Veon Bell is nuts. I think Le'Veon Bell is the better player. His durability and other stuff is something that can maybe push him down the list. But if once you have him on the field, I think Le'Veon Bell is the better player. I agree with that. I think that's a good point. Let's see what else do we got here. Dre Day 2014. Eli Bell, so he was underneath all those guys?
69.
They tried Green ahead of Eli Manning on that list? On Bleacher Report, that's great. 201. Okay, Paul, go ahead. Just give your piece before I get to the next caller. Go ahead.
There are reasons why the internet should not exist. This is one of them.
All right, let's get to Dave in Cranford. He'll be our final call before we get our guest,
69.
Ernie Martinez, on.
69 for Eli Manning.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Two Super Bowl MVPs.
Good, guys. It's awesome to talk to you. Hey, I just want to talk about the improvement of second-year players. Because
sure.
I think that's a – I'd like to get, you know, both of your comments on it. But I think that, you know, we really got – when you consider the amount of time – that a lot of the first-year players last year, you know, the Paul Perkins of the world, you know, the Sterling Shepherds of the world, Gerald Adams, you know, the whole draft class, I thought really got a lot of play time, maybe minus B.J. Goodson, who didn't see a whole lot of time, but did see time on special teams. Very often, you know, again, we'll all look at Landon Collins as the poster child of someone who goes from first year to second year in terms of a step up. I'm not suggesting that we're going to see that from everybody, but I really do think that the second-year players this year are all positioned to play a pretty significant role in their different roles on the team, and I think that's a place where you can really see a roster like the Giants take a big step forward. I'd love to get your guys' comments on it.
Yeah, Dave, I think you hit it on the head, and I think a lot of times people get so excited about the rookie class, they lose sight of the fact that it's really the second-year players, I think, that can impact your team more than the rookie class can. And I think you're absolutely right. When you take a look at the second-year class, B.J. Goodson will have a chance to start. Paul Perkins will have a chance to start. Drell Adams will have a chance to impact the team. Obviously, Sterling Shepard and Eli Apple are still very much in the mix. So they have a very good group of guys here, Paul, that could really be difference makers for the Giants.
There's no question. And this is part of the reason why the Giants believe their window is right here. It's right now.
Yeah.
And why shouldn't it be? The mixture of youth and experience is perfect. It's exactly where you want it to be.
Thank you, Dave.
Because both groups are significant contributors at the same time.
Let's go to our guest now. We're joined by Ernie Martinez from KLSD and Fox Sports Radio in San Diego. Ernie, you got John Schmoke and Paul Dottino here in New York. Thanks a lot for the time and waking up a little bit early with us. How you doing today?
John and Paul, great to be with you. And you have two young kids. I've been up for a few hours already, so I'm ready to go.
Ernie, I have my first due in August. I'm going to try to enjoy whatever sleep I'm going to have in the next month and a half. So I'm with you.
Well, congratulations are in order then.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll apologize, first of all, for if we go a little long with you. We just have a lot of ground to cover here with all the facets of the Chargers this year. I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about. So let's kind of start with the bigger picture stuff in the move first.
Okay.
My understanding, Ernie, is that they're going to have their, like, offices and training facilities in, like, different places based on training camp in the spring and the season. How are the logistics of all that going to work for the Chargers this year?
That's going to be the big thing. You know, with a new head coach, I think that adds more to Anthony Lynn.
Yeah, it does.
Not only to get this team back to the playoff, which a lot of people believe this is a playoff team, and they can be a playoff team, take away all the injuries they have. So, you know, he's got that to focus on. Then the transition to Los Angeles. Now, they've just finished up their practices here in San Diego a week ago, and after covering the Chargers since 1991, to walk through the facility for the last time,
wow,
not only growing up in San Diego and then covering this team for as long as I have, to walk through that the facilities there, it brings back a lot of memories covering this team. But, you know, that's the reality of it. The Chargers are gone. They're up to L.A. They're not going to be – they're not going to have the same facilities. Like you said, the logistics are not going to be in their favor. It's all about them putting it in their favor. And I think the bigger story is this team going up to L.A. and trying to be recognized by the fans of L.A. because as of right now, there's not a lot of interest in the Los Angeles Chargers, I should say. And because they're competing for so many other things. I mean, you've got two college football teams up there that are going to be bigger news than the Chargers in the coming season with, yeah, UCLA and USC. You've got the Rams, who the Chargers feel they could compete with, but that remains to be seen. The Rams are the team that everybody accepted going back there, and then they had the season that they had last year. And you still have the Lakers. The Lakers, being as bad as they've had the last few years, they're still the top bill in L.A., and then the Dodgers are doing what they're doing. So you see the storyline. The Chargers have a lot of things to compete with. Now, the logistics, those things are going to be in place once they move into the stadium. Of course, that's being pushed back another season, so that's another thing they're going to have to deal with, see how they're going to be able to deal with it. I think for right now, this team really has to focus on 2017 and watching the transition of some of these players go from what people would call a sleepy town of San Diego to the bright light big city of L.A. And find out what awaits them there. I think that's going to be the bigger story for the Chargers and their players in 2017.
So where will they actually practice during the course of the season, Ernie? Will it be someplace near the stadium? Are guys going to be holding up in hotels during the course of the year? I mean, I bring this up because way back when, and I'm talking a long time ago, when the Giants used to play at the Yale Bowl in Connecticut, you know, they were in the mix of trying to figure out where to play. Yankee Stadium was going to be ripped down. They were going to move to Giants Stadium. They had to go to the Yale Bowl for a couple of seasons. And they practiced down here in New Jersey and literally had to bus up to their games. And everyone who has ever talked about those seasons, all the old-timers say, it was like playing every single game on the road. And it physically and emotionally and mentally battered us beyond belief, and that it definitely impacted our performance on the field. What are the Chargers going to do in season? And I'm telling you, they're playing the Giants here at MetLife. It's a 1 o'clock game, as John said. They'll be playing what is a body clock 10 a.m. game when they come out here. These are all obstacles, in my mind, that this team's got to deal with.
No, and you're right on with that. And as far as the travel distance, everything during the preseason will remain close. The StubHub Center and the practice facilities up in Orange County, which is, you know, an hour drive, but, you know, you have to throw in the traffic that these players are going to have to deal with.
L.A. traffic? You have traffic in L.A.? You have traffic in L.A.?
And, you know, but it was surprising to me. And that's one thing I never really realized what these players were going to have to do, but we have heard more players say the whole move has been a burden for some of these players that have just come to San Diego in the last couple of years, and they were just settling in San Diego and putting roots here, buying houses here, and all of a sudden the team moves to L.A. So, yes, that could be a problem, because where that affects the player is a lot of this work in the transition have been put on the wives and the families. And your family life is not the way it should be or the way you want it to be. You know, that could affect the player depending on the player. So, yeah, we've already heard that the transition, the moves, the renting of places, looking for a new place, the what schools are going to be good for the kids who are there. Now, I think the biggest story, Philip Rivers has 8 kids. He just bought a place in San Diego a few years ago. Now, his family, for the time being, is going to stay in San Diego. He's only got a couple more years anyway, so I don't see him moving. But he is a family guy. So I think him being away from his family that he's very close with and him having to travel back and forth. Now, he will stay up there, I'm sure, in a hotel during the week, but he's not going to have the family life and family interaction the way he had before. It'll be interesting to see how Philip handles that side of it. So, yeah, there definitely is going to be, I believe, the challenges of these guys being away and making that move. And it's going to be a lot more travel because the facilities here in San Diego were right around the corner from our radio station. They had their practice facilities. They had the practice field there. They had everything there. And they literally had to go 10 minutes, if not 5 to 10 minutes, to Qualcomm Stadium to play their game. So everything was very convenient here in San Diego. So, yes, I do think that could factor in to the way it affects some of the players moving forward in 2017.
Final thing on the move for me, Ernie, before we move on to the team itself. They're not building their own stadium. From what I read, they're renting a building to have their offices in. How permanent do you think this is? Is there still a window for you think down the road for them to come back? Or are they all in lock, stock, and barrel? They're going to be the L.A. Chargers for the next 20 years, and that's that. What's your feel? Because my feel is that this is almost like a divorce that nobody's happy about. Is there a chance that there's a reconciliation at some point?
A lot of people will tell you that first things first, San Diego needs to get a stadium. They need to get a place to play.
Right.
And the way politics in San Diego run are sort of the sign of the times. A lot of cities are not going to pay for a new stadium. And unless you have owners like a Jerry Jones and a Stan Kroenke. Now, I believe that at some point within the next few years that Dean Spanos could sell this team because he's already doubled the price of this franchise. And when his father, Alex, passes away, there's going to be a lot of costs that go along with the wills and leaving the team in that transition.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't feel that the Spanoses, who are looked at as one of the poor owners of the NFL, is not going to be able to withstand that. So a lot of this is being thrown out there. I feel that at some point a bigger money owner will come and buy the team. I just don't see the Chargers working in Los Angeles, and I do think people will – the person who will buy that team will look at San Diego, goes, why they ever move the team, I don't understand. I think if you have a big money owner who comes in here, like a Stan Kroenke, who's willing to buy the land, build the stadium that he wants, I just don't see why an owner wants to rent from another owner. I just don't see that. I know it's worked there in New York with the Giants and the Jets, but I just don't see that working with Stan Kroenke and Dean Spanos or another owner who was to come in and buy this team with a bigger money pocket. And that's just my feel. That's just my guess that will happen. I think football will eventually come back to San Diego. Now, that could be wishful thinking for, like I said, a kid who grew up in San Diego watching this team back in the Dan Fouts days. But I just believe that there's a great business opportunity for somebody who has the money and is willing to pay for it here in San Diego.
Ernie, I got to hitch one more question to that topic, though. If that's to happen, then whoever that big pockets money guy is has to believe that the San Diego people will support the team under the new economics of the NFL. Now, I know they love those Dan Fouts teams and Air Coryell. I totally know that. I understand it. Kellen Winslow and Chuck Muncy and all those guys. But the new economics of the NFL say not only do you have to own your own stadium, but you have to have so many luxury suites, so many PSLs, and it takes a lot of bucks, corporate and public bucks, to be able to put fannies in all those seats to make that pay off. I don't know the San Diego market well enough to know if they can, as a city, support a team in the new economic climate that the NFL's become.
I believe they could. It's the overwhelming response for this team to leave after 56 years. It's the longest-running franchise in professional sports to get up and leave. And the fan base for this team really started getting that rock-solid foundation. This started to be a team fans would start to follow. They were going on the road, and they were representing their team over the last few years. And that's something you just didn't see a lot of unless they've got deep into the playoffs. But You started to see the fan base really follow these teams to regular season games, meaningful games during the regular season over the last decade. And that was just something that I think is part of, it maybe took a little longer than other franchises, but it started to happen. And being the former flagship station for the Chargers over the last 5 years up until this past season, we got a really good feel on a city that is willing to support an NFL. Now, you bring up a great question in the sense, will we have the right politicians in place to help bring a team here and make it right? Now, that would be remain to be seen, but I think as far as a fan base and the businesses here in San Diego would fully support the NFL back in San Diego, and I think the Chargers more so because they want the Chargers. People said, you know, they were talking about bringing the Raiders here for, you know, and trying to get something with them. They've been talking about Jacksonville. And people go, we don't want the Raiders. We don't want Jacksonville. We don't want somebody else's
not
franchise. We want our Chargers to the point where people were saying they want to sue the Chargers to keep the name in San Diego. I think, and then there was a big boost for that. So I think that says a lot that the people here in San Diego would be willing to support the San Diego Chargers if they were to come back.
You know, Ernie, and now let's get to the fun stuff because, you know, the shame of it is, and we're joined by Ernie Martinez, Fox Sports Radio out there in San Diego. The shame of it is, even though the Chargers went 5-11 last year, I just wrote up a huge profile on them. To me, the Chargers played a lot more like an 8-8 team last year than a 5-11 team, and I'll throw some numbers out to why I think that. Their point differential is just minus 13, which is usually, you know, equates to around a 500 team. You guys had a negative 55 point differential in the fourth quarter of games, which cost you a ton of games. You had fourth quarter leads in 6 of their 11 losses. And then the turnovers. The Chargers turned the ball over 35 times last year, most in the NFL. Those are fixable issues. To me, I don't see a reason why this Charger team can't bounce back a little bit this year and be around 500 and compete for a wild card spot.
You know, you just made my face turn red again of all the post game shows that we had to do after all those post games last season. Yeah, those numbers were overwhelming and overbearing. It didn't make those post game shows a lot of fun. And you saw it how it weighed on the players, I think, more so than Phillip Rivers, because I think for the first time in quite some time, if not for the first time, you know, you can blame your star players for key losses, but a lot of those really started to reflect on Phillip Rivers and those late collapses last season. And it was tough to see. And I agree with you. People say that this Chargers team has so much on their plate that they're not going to be good next season. People a lot on a national basis says they see the Chargers being a playoff team. I do see them being better than 5-11 because of what you just said. I think the key hirings that Anthony Lynn, you know, he keeps Ken Whisenhunt, who has a fantastic relationship with Phillip Rivers. Mm-hmm. They gelled very well together the last time they went to playoffs in Mike McCoy's first year. But they also brought in Gus Bradley for defense, which I think those will help those games that they just lost in where they fell short, because there were a lot of those games that the defense was out on the field more often than they wanted to late in games. And I think Gus Bradley will be a huge addition. And at the same time, George Stewart on the special teams, I think that's another upgrade. That's another area of this Chargers team lacked in field position, and it just got worse as the season went on. And at the same time, you know, you go back to Phillip Rivers for some of those late game collapses, but this team just got battered as the season went on. They've got to be strong up front. They're going to be relying on a lot of rookie linemen to play well, and that's going to be one of the tests. And then you got to keep your key defense and offensive guys healthy. Keenan Allen had a fantastic rookie season, but has been injured, you know, every season since then. Mm-hmm. Jason Verrett, Casey Hayward could be, I think, one of the biggest dynamic duels in the secondary. But Jason Verrett, he's got to stay healthy. He's been injured the last couple of years. So I think if this team stays healthy with the coaching additions on defense, another season with Whisenhunt and Rivers working together, and then the hiring of Stewart, are definitely going to make this a better team in 2017. How good? I think if they stay healthy, and that to me is the biggest thing, because this has not been a healthy team for the last three seasons. They've been often injured from the beginning of the season, going into the season, throughout the season. I think that's going to be one of the key issues. If they can stay healthy, I think this could be a competitive Chargers team.
Ernie, our viewers here in New York know how much I believe in the trenches. And to be honest, that's why I have significant questions about the Chargers even being a 500 team. They're asking Forrest Lamp to step in immediately, and I think they want him to start and produce right away. I think that may be a little much to ask out of him. And they signed Russell Okung, who we just got done talking to the Broncos people yesterday previewing Denver, and they were really down on him, pretty much saying that he's on his last legs, and he's now going to be protecting Phillip Rivers' blind side at left tackle. To me, that is not a good recipe to be a playoff contender, but I'd like to get your take on that. And then also, if I can, part B, how about DJ Fluker, who the Giants just picked up as a free agent from the Chargers? I know he was part of that line last year that had a lot of trouble.
He did. You know, I know what you're on and off the field don't matter, because it's all about when you're in the trenches. DJ Fluker was a fantastic guy and still is. He had some good games, I think, more so early on. I think he was just a little overwhelmed at times. But, unfortunately for the Chargers, I think, for anybody, I think with players like that, who you're a high draft pick, you come in and you don't fulfill what the team really wanted you. I always think the next team benefits. So I think you're getting a good guy with DJ Fluker, because I think in that transition, you learn a little bit more about yourself. And I think that's just the natural progression of being able to stay at the top of your sport or staying in the sport. And I would have to agree with you and Okung. That's one thing that I've already forgot about, because when we could not understand why the Chargers went out and got him. Obviously, it was a big splash for them, and a lot of people felt that that was a big deal. But I agree with you. Knowing the people that I know in Denver and talking with them, they go, hey, good riddance. Now that's something that the Chargers will have to deal with. I'm a little worried about him protecting Phillip Rivers. As mentioned, you need Phillip Rivers. I think we already started to see a little bit maybe in decline, and just because of some of those late game collapses, some of the passes that he threw. Look, he's got 2 years left basically in his career. He's got 2 years left in with the Chargers, and it's all about him and Antonio Gates in trying to win something for them. Whatever that's going to be remains to be seen. But if Phillip Rivers goes down, there's not much for the Chargers. And if you're relying on Russell Okung to be the guy, based on what we've seen in the last couple of years, they can be in for a surprise. So I think that's definitely one of the key things. As mentioned, you got young guys up front. You're asking Lamb to come up in there early to be one of the big players on this team. Not to say that it can be done. I think it's one of those things. It's going to be a wait-and-see situation. Will Okung be able to protect Phillip Rivers? Will he be a different player? Are these young guys going to be able to step up and open up holes for Melvin Gordon, who needs to step up in his third season as well in the run game? So, yeah, I think those are two, as far as the Okung factor, I think that's going to be a big wait and see. And my best to DJ Fluker there with the New York Giants. Are getting a good guy for sure.
Can I ask one more thing about the offense, please, Ernie? Andre Williams, the former Giants running back, who unfortunately it did not work out here well for him. What are their plans for him? What do you see him doing with that offense?
You know,
you love Andre Williams.
I was a big fan. I don't mind telling you, and I wish him well because he's a good guy.
Yeah, well, you probably could tell me a little bit more about him, because that's one of the guys that I can honestly say I'm not too familiar with. I know they brought him in here, you bring guys in like Williams, and it's one of those wait and see situations to see how he's going to add to this offense. The one thing I do know is, this is a Chargers team that needs to be well-balanced. You know, in the past, or teams can rely on their defense to win games or their offense to win games, or even a special team. This is a team that needs to be well balanced. They need everything clicking for 2017 to be a success. And, you know, as mentioned, it goes back to the injuries, and it's all about bringing these new guys in to accept the system. Now, everybody seems to have fallen in love with Anthony Lynn. Everybody was not in favor of Mike McCoy, the reason why he's out. They just didn't think he was the right guy. You bring in Anthony Lynn, and from everything that we've heard from the players, they love the way he's run camp so far, and they love his plan right now. But, of course, we'll see when the when the 2017 season gets underway.
I want to do one more follow-up on the offense real quick. You mentioned Melvin Gordon, so I'll look past him. We haven't even mentioned your first-round pick, Mike Williams, so I think a lot of people were surprised when as high as he did. How quickly do they think he's going to be able to help? And in addition to that, Hunter Henry, I think, was fantastic for you guys last year. Is he pretty set as the Antonio Gates heir apparent?
Oh, God, yeah. You know, yeah. Antonio Gates is still going to make you some big plays within the red zone. When he's still that big body guy, you give him the short pass, you know, he's going to still muscle his way in. But Hunter Henry will be the lead guy. I mean, yeah, fantastic in his first season with the Chargers. The fans fell in love with him. Didn't fumble the ball a lot. He gained yardage. Just a very confident tight end. And, yeah, that transition, I think, will go without a hitch. Now, Mike Williams, we were excited about him on draft day, but, you know, then again, he's still a slender body guy. Is he going to be able still to muscle up with some of the bigger defenders in the NFL, especially when you're going to utilize them as part of your key offensive tool in the upcoming season, you know, opposite of Keenan Allen? And then he went out and he got his shoulder injury, and they're nursing him back very slowly. So that's another situation where your guy comes in here, and the question is helping him build some muscle, get strong, get ready for what he's going to endure in 2017 as a rookie, and all of a sudden he gets this injury. And, you know, it was one of those things where I don't think the organization wanted to know, but it sort of slipped out, and now we do know. So it's one of those things that other people are going to know about what to key on when the season gets underway. So, yeah, I think he's a great addition to this team, but I don't like the fact that, you know, he's already dealing with an injury.
Yep.
When the one thing that you're really thinking about is how is he going to match up with some of the bigger defenders in the NFL in his rookie year.
Ernie, I know time's closing a little bit on us here, but I want to flip it to defense because Joey Bosa comes in, gets 10.5 sacks right away.
In 12 games.
40-plus total tackles. Look, I'm going to tell you, I how could you not love him coming out of school at Ohio State from the very get-go? Everybody in their right mind knew he'd be a top-5 pick. I mean, the guy's an absolute stud, but did he even exceed the Chargers' rookie expectations?
He did. He exceeded everybody's expectations. It didn't get off to a great start with him holding out and going through that whole thing, and then having to work him in slowly in those first few games, and people thought that was going to be a factor, and we were playing it up like, okay, you work him in slowly. He's a big kid who wants to get up there. He brings a lot of excitement. Is he going to do something where he's going to injure himself? That never happened. He came out. He blew doors open. Everybody fell in love with Joey Bosa. And for the first time here in San Diego, there was somebody to really hang your fanship on because, you know, we thought Manti Te'o would be one of those guys, not a big body guy like Joey Bosa, but he came in with just as much excitement, and Te'o was never able to live up to that. And now Joey Bosa came in here, and the fans loved him. His jersey sold. He was out there making the big hits. He had that Mongo-type attitude that people really loved. And I think the sky's the limit for that guy. I think if there's one guy who's going to transition well, if he plays it right, he can go up to Los Angeles do very well for himself.
Yes.
But Joey Bosa is going to be a key part to that Chargers defense, no doubt, in 2017.
Hey, look, Ernie, and I'll just give one overall defensive question before we say goodbye. You look at the premium positions on defense, right? Defensive ends. You guys check the boxes with Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. Excellent pass rushers. Cover corners.
Yeah.
Jason Verrett, Casey Hayward, the Chargers, again, check the boxes with two corners that are pretty good cover guys. Then you look at middle linebacker, Denzel Perryman, a young guy, big, hard hitter. He can get downhill in the run game. It seems like the Chargers check a lot of boxes on defense. You draft a guy like Desmond King, who I know can be kind of like a hybrid safety corner type. You were 15th in the league in yards per game last year. You turn teams over an awful lot. I think you were fourth most takeaways in the NFL with 28. The Chargers have been making for a pretty decent defense here if they can stay healthy.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're sort of being recognized going in. I think there's still those question marks on offense, you know, and as mentioned, Casey Hayward, Jason Verrett being healthy, I think that's a great dynamic too, and in a safety position. They're great with Craig Mager, Adrian Phillips, and Darryl Stuckey, and they did have to go out in the draft and you know, secure some extra guys just in case, and they were able to do that with Rayshon Jenkins, and as you mentioned, Desmond King, who's he's going to be very versatile. He's going to be able to play cornerback and safety. So he could do that. But once again, you're asking that from a rookie. But I think there's enough around him to bring him in slowly, to learn the ropes from some of these guys that have been around. And you bring up Perryman, fantastic player. But once again, he's got to stay healthy. He was injured down the middle of the season, right when he was hitting his height, and he was making some big plays. But then again, he went down, and I think that's going to be the key. I think when they took the hit with Jason Verrett and they took the hit with Denzel Perryman, those were two key losses that they just weren't able to recover from. You keep those guys healthy, and every name that you just mentioned, as well as I think this is going to be a pretty good defense. And that's where I think it gets them even better when you bring a guy in like Gus Bradley. He's going to bring a whole new mindset to these guys. They're already starting to accept it now, and I think you accept that now. You go into preseason, and you head into the season with the wind to your back, and I think that's a great thing for this Chargers defense. But once again, it really comes down to health and keeping these guys healthy throughout the season.
You know, I just wanted to touch one more thing about Antonio Gates. You talked about how Rivers and Gates are the two guys who the Chargers, they're the face of the franchise, and everybody wants to win for them. How much time does Gates have left? Is there any talk at all that he might be near the end?
Oh yeah, I give him two more seasons if that. I really think we saw some signs last year that we've never seen with Antonio Gates. Some drop passes, plays that he'd normally make, but he was still good enough where you looked at at the end of the season and you knew that he still had one more season. Could this be his last season? It might as well could be his last season. I think you have Hunter Henry coming in. If Hunter Henry can get 2 years under Antonio Gates, he's going to be great for it. I don't see Antonio Gates coming back for a third season. What would be his second season up in L.A., but that remains to be seen. He's, like I said, he's still big, he's still physical, but there were some drop-off issues last season that I saw in his play that we'll be watching closely here as they approach the 2017 season as well.
Yeah, you hate to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ernie, final one before you say goodbye. I think it's interesting. I think the AFC West and NFC East are probably the two best divisions in football this upcoming season in each respective conference, yet they're playing each other, and they get to beat each other up within the division as well.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious, and you've got to wonder if the schedule is going to set it up now, just because of how it worked out this year, that the two best divisions in each conference might only send one team to the playoffs because they're going to beat the hell out of each
Could
other.
Could happen.
Well, that's the way the NFL wants it. They want people beat each other up, making for exciting games. I love the AFC West. I loved it last year. That's why it was sad to see the Chargers not be as competitive as you knew that they could be because of all these injuries. You know, the Raiders are definitely back. The Chiefs are always going to be good. And as we've talked about, the Chargers to be a much better team if remains healthy. And I think, once again, you know, just – a few years removed from the Super Bowl, the Broncos could be the team that's looking up at everybody else, but I still think they're a strong team, and it's going to be one of those seasons. I've always loved the AFC West because you've always got these really good divisional battles, and I think this is one where you're going to see a lot of these games when they go head-to-head. It's going to make for some exciting action.
Hey, Ernie, are you going to cover the game still, or are you losing your Chargers as well?
We, as far as I know, we're working to still carry their broadcast in San Diego. That is not for sure, of course. I just got back from vacation as I go back to work today.
God bless you.
A lot of things could happen. I sort of put my phone away, and I didn't look at it until I saw the message from you guys. But, yeah, you know what? There's still a lot of interest in the Chargers down here in San Diego. Love them or hate them. I think people still are in transition. And it's going to be one of the more interesting transition seasons for any fan base in professional sports. A lot of people say they're done with them, but as we get closer to the season, that's a lot of these people saying goodbye to the NFL, and people love the NFL, and the one type of the NFL they have here in San Diego is the Chargers. So I think there's still a lot of interest in the Chargers as we approach the upcoming season. But, yeah, we will still cover them because we stayed away from covering them a little bit over the last few months. People are saying, hey, you're not covering the Chargers enough. And then you get the other side of people saying, hey, why are you talking about the team they left us? So it's going to be one of those things where we're going right down the middle. The Chargers giving us a story to talk about. You know what we do in sports radio. We're going to talk about it.
yeah, you do.
Dissect it and make it fun.
Thank you, Ernie.
I hope you get them back, Ernie. I really do. Because you've been with a team for so long. You hope they stick around or at least make their return trip.
Thanks for the time, Ernie. We appreciate it.
Great stuff.
And John and Paul, I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. Have a great summer. Congratulations again with the child.
Thank you, Ernie. And that's why we apologize ahead of time for keeping you for a while, because we did keep him on for a while there, half an hour.
He was very good, though.
Fantastic job by Ernie Martinez, Fox Sports Radio out there in San Diego. Last thing for you before we say goodbye. What does this sound like? A team that has trouble closing games, issues on the offensive line, issue with turnovers. What does that sound like to you?
You're going to tell me the 2015 Giants. That's what you're going to tell me.
Yes, I am. What was the Chargers' problems last year? Closing out games, offensive. Oh, by the way, throw injuries in as a fourth one, by the way. So that's the quartet. The same exact issues the Giants had in 16. Now, the difference From 15 to 16, the Giants added Olivier Vernon, George Jenkins, and Snacks Harrison. The Chargers didn't do that.
It wasn't just a good defense. They became a dominant defense.
That's correct. But again, the Chargers are the 15th-ranked defense last year. They don't have quite as much far to go. But point, I still believe, again, I don't know because the AFC West is so strong that they're going to be able to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to be a lot more competitive record-wise this year than they were last year, just because there were so many freaky things at the end of games last year. I can't imagine they're going to happen again.
I'm going to go back to the linchpin, Russell Okung, who clearly is not even anywhere near the player that Eric Flowers is, because if he was, the Giants would have gone after him thinking he was an upgrade. But clearly he must not be an upgrade because they didn't go after him.
Well, it's also a money thing, too, obviously. He's making a whole lot of money.
But the worries are out there about fumes left in the tank.
And look, that's I think when you look at the Chargers, that's the question.
That's a big deal.
And Phillip Rivers is not exactly Captain Mobility here like Eli Manning, where he's going to run around and avoid pass rushers.
Right.
So we'll see if the Chargers can figure that out. It'll be a fun game. And as we go through these schedules, teams, guys, you guys, the Giants have a lot of fun competitive games this year. It's going to be one heck of a difficult season. Anyway, thanks for joining us.
Seahawks tomorrow.
We appreciate it. Tomorrow, the Seattle Seahawks. Then we'll close up the week with the Los Angeles Rams on Thursday. Tomorrow, it's Tino and Feagles, and me and Paul close out the week for you on Thursday. For Tino, I'm Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow at noon on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.